Podcast. I'm your host, Lev Moscow, and today we have a really exciting show. We're here with Pauline Gross-Jean, who is a professor at the School of Economics, University of New South Wales. And today we're going to talk about men. And you've done some really interesting work on crisis that men are facing today around the world and the economic origins of this crisis. So you've written that, men are consistently less healthy than women and three times more likely to commit suicide. And that part of understanding these trends requires us to understand masculinity norms. And that there's actually a really interesting natural experiment that took place in Australia, which allows us to understand maybe some of the origins of these masculinity norms. So what I think we could do is we could start with what are those damaging masculinity norms? And then maybe you could get into what your research found in Australia. Does that sound okay?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, great.
So what we talk about, so we're trying to define masculinity norms. And the first thing that's important to keep in mind is that there is a lot of cultural variation in these norms that define how men should behave. So, you know, in one country, they're going to be very different from another country. And so what we're going to talk about specifically is masculinity norms in Western societies. Mm-hmm. And there's actually been a lot of interesting sociological work studying what people now call toxic masculinity from ethnographies that actually started in Australia and were then applied to the US, and they found very similar norms in both countries that define how boys and men should behave. Mm. So you were talking about how damaging these norms can be. And so we talk a little bit about that in the paper. And so we review a few facts, and you know, you've mentioned some of them, the fact that men are consistently less healthy and die younger than women. In particular, that higher risk of suicide. So it's not only physical health, but mental health. Mm-hmm. And we link that in the paper to help avoidance. And this is linked to masculinity norms, right? I mean, what does it mean to be a real man is to be tough and, you know, suck it up and not express your emotion and your feelings. And that leads to a wide variety of mental and physical illness. And there's been a lot of medical evidence for that. Mm-hmm. There's also, you know, another aspect of masculinity norms is that you should toughen up and not open up. But, you know, doing violent, risky things will enable you to achieve higher status among your peers. And this also can be damaging for health. Another aspect of these norms, and there is something called the conformity to masculinity norms inventory that sort of measures these different facets of masculinity norms, and that find very strong correlation between the kind of things that I was talking to you about. So not expressing your emotions, risk-taking, accepting and condoning violence, but also opposition and repression of homosexuality. Mm-hmm. And this is something that, you know, men do to make themselves appear tough. So essentially they pick on guys that are perceived as weaker, and in particular homosexual men, to not so much, you know, maybe because they have a problem with homosexuality per se, but to make themselves appear stronger. So it's kind of a bullying thing that goes together with these other norms that I was talking to you about. So this is the kind of thing, outcomes that we look at in the paper. We look at male suicide. We look at violence, you know, looking at crime statistics. So we look at assault, rape, domestic violence. We look at attitudes towards homosexuality that we measure in a referendum and same-sex marriage. And we look at other health outcomes that are due to help avoidance, in particular, you know, prostate cancer, as well as lung disease that is due to smoking. So that's also due to risk-taking.
Wow.
So we find that all these outcomes are not only tied together, but also tied to the historical sex ratios. So that is to say, the historical ratio of men to the number of women. So the explanation for this is that it's actually the competitive forces between men that lead them to seek status, and they seek status by doing all the kind of things that I was talking to you about. And, you know, I think any man or any boy in a playground can relate to the fact that to achieve status, and I think that starts from a very early age, like, mm-hmm. you know, I've got a 3-year-old who comes back from school talking about, you know, killing people and swords and guns and things like this, even mm-hmm. though, you know, he's got a big sister, he was never exposed to this at home, mm-hmm. but he comes he comes home from school talking about guns and killing people. So men are exposed to competitive pressures. And in our example, it comes from the fact that there was a lot of men for very few women. So they had to compete with one another to get these women. But you could imagine that it's due to the economy. Okay, there's very few jobs. Men have to compete for these jobs. And that also leads to competitive pressure. And one might think that it might lead to the same kind of behavior. So there is all these competitive pressures. Men compete with one another to achieve status. And that leads to an exacerbation of the kind of masculinity norms that I was telling you about in the cultural context where status is achieved through these things. And I think that's important, because if status was achieved by being kind, well, then you would see that, you know, maybe they would become even kinder. But that's not the kind of cultural context that we study in the context of Australia and probably as well the US.
Yeah. And so there's also a lasting impact of the skewed sex ratios, right? So it's not just Australia in the 19th century, but it impacts people today.
That's right. And so, and in particular, we think that this is all because, you know, once you observe these behaviors, then you observe that men achieve high status by displaying those behavior, and that perpetuates itself, because other men will want to imitate those to achieve status, and the new generations are coming and are adopting these norms and behavior to achieve status. And we actually find evidence that we also are able to capture bullying in schools through a survey of children. And we find evidence on bullying in schools. And we think that that's kind of the socialization process, if you want, that implies that these norms are transmitted over time. And it's just a process of imitation and persistence that's due to the fact that, you know, you have men at the top who have incentive not to upheld the system. And young men and boys will come and imitate those high status men by adopting the same kind of behavior. Mm-hmm. And the worst thing about this is that everybody's unhappy about this, right? Because these men die younger, they commit suicide. The male suicide rate in Australia is extremely high. But women also suffer, because we find evidence on domestic violence and rape. And so you have this sort of, you know, equilibrium that's due to this historical shock that's not, you know, optimal for current day characteristics, because the sex ratio now is balanced. So it's not so much that these men have to compete for these women, but because, you know, a lot of behavior is just learned through observing what other quote unquote successful individuals do, then you have this persistence of these norms and behavior in the long run. Mm-hmm.
And you even suggest that men who embrace these traditional norms in the age of COVID-19 may be doing less social distancing.
Well, that's, you know, we sort of suggest that in the paper, and that's something that has puzzled. You know, if you look at mortality rates from COVID-19, it's much higher in men, and there is might be some, you know, genetic determinant, or maybe the chromosome does something really bad for that. But I think a lot of this is due to behavior, and a lot of having to do with, you know, risk taking and smoking, and the fact that, you know, it might be perceived as weak to social distance or wear a mask. You know, there is a lot of, you know, a lot of men will say, well, you know, I won't wear a mask because I'm a strong man and I won't get it. And it's the flu. And you can see this in the, you know, I mean, there's been a lot of debate in the media about the reaction of female country leaders and male country leaders, and the sort of male bravado that famous leaders in the US and the UK have adopted, and the kind of detrimental consequences that that had on how they dealt with the pandemic.
Yeah, and you don't talk about this in the paper much, but I'm wondering what you think. In at least in the United States, so much of our response to the pandemic has been partisan, which is kind of strange. But you go to redder parts of the country, and, you know, there are signs on shops saying, you know, our shop is going to stay open. And you've obviously seen all of the protests, the men with guns. What is it about the conservative mindset which so readily embraces these masculine norms?
So I don't know that I can speak to the conservative mindset. I think I can speak to the male bravado, masculinity, threatened masculinity mindset, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And there's actually, so Delphine Horviller she's a scholar and a rabbi in France, and she's done a lot of work linking threatened masculinity to the expression of racial prejudice and sexual prejudice, right? So there is this idea that when masculinity norms are threatened, and you know that's something that has been going on in the US with the enfranchisement of sexual minorities and women, mm-hmm. men will react against that because this threatens their status, and it also threatens the way they know how to achieve status, mm-hmm. and they don't want to give it up because, you know, the other ways to achieve status are not something that they want to do or that they know how to do. You know, it's, you know, they know how, you know, some men know how to beat up other men in a playground or boys in a playground. It's, you know, going into Harvard is a different strategy that comes with a different set of skills. Mm-hmm. And not all, everybody has these skills, right? So you see that when the dominant ways of achieving status is threatened through the enfranchisement of women and, you know, other minorities, you're going to have these people clinching to these norms because giving them up will have negative repercussion for them. And so I think, you know, I would tie a lot of these behaviors to this threatened masculinity norms that I think, you know, is a real thing in the US and you know, to some extent that, you know, Donald Trump is also an embodiment of that, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. it threatens white men who react in a certain way because they don't want to, like they perceive that they have to give up their status. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, if it goes, then the ways to achieve status will be permanently different and they will permanently lose out.
Right. But we all be happier if we changed our behavior.
Yes, sure. But you know, if you have, you know, the men who have achieved status in this way, they don't want to mm-hmm. give it up.
Yeah. Yeah. And so finally, I'd like to come back to you and you were telling the story of your son and you know all of this stuff. And I'm sure in your house, you do everything you can to fight against these kind of masculinity norms. And yet, you know, when your kid goes to school, he's still exposed to them. So James, what do we do on an individual level? And then what do we do on a societal level to confront the things that we know are really toxic?
Yeah, so I think, you know, that really goes beyond work as an economist.
Yeah, no, so now I'm just asking you your opinion. What do we do?
I don't really know. So one interesting thing that we haven't explored so much in this paper, but that I've explored in another paper where I look at the impact of this male bias sex ratio on what women do, you know, female labor force participation. And so one thing that is actually helpful is migration, mm-hmm. because migrants come with a new set of norms and behavior. And so it makes it easier to switch. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really tough question. I mean, I think you need a lot of public education and you need people to understand these problems. And I think you need, you know, these men to understand that it's not good for them and it's not good for their wives. But I think that takes a really long time. I actually have another paper in the case of Australia that shows that people who have conservative gender norms mm-hmm. are actually happier in their relationship. Hmm. Because, you know, changing the equilibrium is difficult and costly, right? So, I mean, deciding to be a stay-at-home dad is difficult because socially it's going to have a very high cost. And that might hurt your relationship because then, you know, it hurts the gender dynamics in the couple. And so, you know, you may have a whole lot of men who want to become stay-at-home dad or spend more time with their children, but they're shunned by society, and that is very damaging for their mental as well as physical health, right? And so I think you need public policy. So you need, you know, an active, so in the case of paternity leave, you need to have a provision for compulsory paternity leave so you don't have social stigma associated with taking these things. So there is actually a really interesting experiment that was done in Saudi Arabia where Leo Bernstein and his colleague from the University of Chicago have interviewed Saudi men about their opinion about female labor force participation. And what they find is that these men would actually like their wife to work because that would relieve the pressure on them. But they think that if they let their wives work, their neighbors will think really badly of them, that there will be a really high social stigma associated with it. So in other terms, they, you know, they're individually willing to let their wives work, but they think they misperceive the social norm. they think that other people are against female labor force participation. And hence, they don't let their wife work because they think that their neighbor is against it. But their neighbor is as much in favor of their own wife working as they are. So what they do in this paper is that they actually provide information. So they say, you know, you thought that your that you're okay with your letting your wife work, but your you thought that your neighbor was against it. But we've surveyed your neighbor, and he actually, he thinks the same thing as you. And they're able to update those beliefs of these men. And what they observe is that these men, updated with this new information, actually are more likely to sign their wife up for a working matching agency, for a job matching agency. And so I think a lot of it's, so this goes into this misperceived social norm, right? So it's maybe a big information campaign saying, you know, look, you might think that these norms that you are adhering to are good because they're, you know, associated with status, but the outcome of these norms is that you're more likely to commit suicide. You're more likely to be unemployed because you won't want to do what is called a pink collar job in the service sector. And maybe, you know, men won't change themselves, but if there is sufficient information about how it might hurt their sons, then I think, you know, there is hope for change. Yeah. And so, and I do think that that's kind of what is going on at the moment. You know, there's a lot of articles in the press about repression of emotion and emotional distress in men and how that leads to suicide. And I think, you know, if people become sufficiently convinced that their sons are at risk of these behaviors and that their daughters are also at risk of these behaviors because they're, you know, more likely to be sexually assaulted, then, you know, there's hope that once people understand that these norms are actually damaging and maladaptive, if you want, for current circumstances, then there might be a change.